Welcome to Wine Soundtrack USA. Listen to the passion with which producers narrate their winery and their world in 30 answers. Discover their stories, personalities, and passions.
Hello, friends and listeners of Wine Soundtrack. This is Allison Levine, and I am sitting here today with Alicia Sylvester of Banshee Wines from Healdsburg, California. Alicia, tell us about Banshee Wines.
Hi, thank you for having me. Okay, so Banshee Wines is an awesome brand. It was created and founded by Baron Ziegler and two other of his friends. And this was in 2008. They were in the Dogpat District of San Francisco, and what they really wanted was to make an affordable Sonoma County Pinot Noir, because they really couldn't afford really nice wine. So they wanted to have like nice wine, but affordable. Coming from Sonoma County, really based in like West County and Russian River and in our Sonoma Coast area. So that's how Banshee was founded. They opened their tasting room right off the Healdsburg Square in 2013, and it was very revolutionary of its time because it's casual seating. And at that time, still all bar top tasting. And so we've got the record player in there, we've got a couch in there and like beanbag stuff. And we've definitely developed and matured a little bit in the tasting room, but that's how it really started. And that's kind of the essence of Banshee, is that these are wines that are meant to have conversations with on your couch with friends. These are wines that you take to picnics with and you enjoy them with friends. You enjoy them now, you enjoy them later. They're really for drinking. And my favorite part is that, and what I really like to say about Banshee Wines is that these are for making conversations, so that we can have conversations with each other because we're enjoying wine and just talking to each other, or we can then switch that conversation because we're like, whoa, what's this wine? Like, let's take a second here. And that's really my job and what I want to bring out of the wines.
Well, to start our conversation, I'm curious about the name Banshee.
Okay, so yeah, Banshee, it has a lot of, it's very whimsical. And so, of course, as a winemaker, we're technical. And so I'm Google Banshee. Oh no, it's this lore of a woman wearing like a cape, her eyes are drenched red from crying, and she screeches out like, rah! I don't know, the Banshee call. And so it's a scream of like death. I'm like, oh no, this is not good. This is not what I, okay. And so I asked our marketing team, I was like, what is going on? Because I'm not gonna be this for Halloween.
I can't be the screeching woman marketing our wine.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this isn't very sexy, like, come on. And so so what really happened was that Banshee was made very whimsical. You can see we don't have any capsules, and that really was because they couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And so now it's definitely switched more of like, hey, this is more sustainable, use less. So that's really fun. And that's also kind of the same with the name. It was that they needed the name. And they're at the table, and one of the gentleman's dogs is barking in the background, just going off. And one of the gentlemen is just like, hey, get your dog to shut up. He's barking like a banshee. And they, you know, boom, just all look at each other. That's how it came.
A dog barking. Who would have thought? Would have thought? So I'm curious, do you guys own vineyards, or do you lease vineyards, or a combination?
So this is a great, great segue. So as Banshee was acquired by Foley Family Wines in 2018, and so that Banshee has always kind of been had growers, only grower fruit, really cute, tiny vineyards. Love that. We're keeping that. We have our small growers, but also now with our Foley background, backbone of support, I've got vineyards throughout Sonoma County and throughout California. So I have both. We use growers that are very special for our DTC program, direct to consumer. We're making 150, 200 cases of these high-end single vineyard wines. And then I have my more accessible wines, which are in wholesale, and I'm making a lot larger volume. And so that I need, you got to change your fruit. You got to change your winemaking styles for that.
So speaking of which, I know you're making Pinot Noir, obviously, and Rosé of Pinot Noir. What other grapes do you work with?
So as Banshee started, we're traditional, we're doing Pinot, and we're doing Chardonnay. Then we're like, well, we're whimsy. What else can we get? So we're going to get a Carignan. We're going to do Syrah. We kind of got all over the place.
Wow.
So I'm honing us back, and we're focusing. That's what I want, a little focus. Because that's easy. Also, we're going to help the sales team out as well.
Sure.
Everyone needs to work together now. So we focus on Pinot, and then we have our Chardonnay, and then I do Sauvignon Blanc, Rosé, we have our red Mordecai, and then I do a Cabernet. And then we just released our sparkling brut, the 10 of Cups. So also dipping our feet right into the sparkling game. Really fun for me.
Ooh, traditional method.
Yes, traditional.
Ooh. Wow. And what's your total case production?
Well, it is increasing. That's what I can say. Very much, a lot. My history has been with very small brands, and I've really honed in on making the wine myself. And so now that I've been with Banshee, I've really transitioned to having that DTC of my small little babies and then my other monster large SKUs, which really Banshee has started as a baby, and my job is to really help it grow. And we're going through our teenage years, and it's great. This is a controllable teen, not like me. And so we want to make sure we're going to grow appropriately, not getting growing pains, and I want the wines to be consistent. This is what I want, is that when wineries really grow, sometimes you the blends are can be different, and I don't want to do that to our consumers. I want my blends to be exactly the same, so when you're tasting each wine, it's exactly that same one, and then you taste in 6 months and 7 months, and everything is really, you know, the same. And that can be hard to dial in.
And so your total case production currently is about?
A lot. No, not that much. It's really not that. It's still really maintainable. For me, it's a lot. So my Cabernet program has just really grown. We released the 2019 this year, and I did 25,000 cases.
Okay.
My projection for 2021 is making 60,000 cases.
And that's so just of Cabernet.
Just of the Cab. So it's great. I mean, I have a Cab background, so hey, baby, let's just make great wine and make it accessible for everybody to really get them into wine drinking. Because Banshee, it can be, I'm complex, heck yes, but also fun and getting those conversations started. Because wine can be intimidating. I know a lot, everyone's intimidated, and I talk to a lot of tasters, and I say, okay, just tell me one thing that you smell or one thing you taste, and maybe it's a feeling. Tell me that. And they can really, a lot of people can, well, it feels like it might be sweet, you know, from the nose. I'm like, okay. And we can work on that and go from there. So it's really, that's really fun.
Well, so you're ranging from a couple hundred cases of some wines, 25,000 cases another. We won't get into exact numbers. I'm going to move on to what you were saying about what connects people. So I'm curious, what is your first memory relevant to wine?
My first memory relevant to wine. Okay, so I've come from a farming family, and so we farm, we call them almonds. Almonds from the Central Valley of California. They're almonds. You can call them whatever you want. Please just eat them. That's fine by me. I usually call them almonds so everyone doesn't, they don't freak out.
The almonds.
So we're at, we have our almond ranch, and we had 20 acres of Zinfandel that was planted there when we purchased this ranch. So really some of my first memories are kind of my mother in wanting to be a wine drinker and a wine grower. And I remember in the basement there was some Franzia boxes going on and the white Zin phase, which we were helping. This is what helped start California wine industry. Was like getting people to drink more wine and then making that wine a little better and better and better. So I think one of my biggest memories is like, okay, it's picking, we're gonna pick, and we use LA grape growers, and so the winemaker's gonna tell us when to pick, but then the grower always like, we need to pick before because we're shriveling, you know. So I always had this like grower versus first picker, and like I've always really understand that relationship, and so here we are. We want every single grape there. So me and my mom and my brother got a little red wagon, and we're getting everything. All the second crop. We're getting every drop of grapes that we can get because we're just little growers.
Cheap labor.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it was, and it, you know, they just picked that 20 acres, just like it was nothing for the our big, you know, our big players that are in the Central Valley. Sure. This, we're nobody. But for us, it was everything. My mom's got a little grape earrings. And I'm like, okay, I got some kind of grape and cow shirt going on, just my style.
I love it. So, okay, picking grapes as a child, got it. Franzia boxes in the cellar, probably not the most memorable wine you've ever drunk. Now that you've been working in wine, is there one wine that stands out? Maybe it was at the beginning of your career, maybe it was something you drank last night that just is one of those kind of iconic wines, one of those aha moments for you. What was it?
I think the aha moment for me with, because, you know, you're always growing your palate and you never really know. You're like, oh yeah, I taste the green bell pepper. Oh, that's not so good. That's not. Okay, great. I've identified it. But as, you know, I hadn't been around super fine wine. I've been around super accessible wine, have college palate. You know, my mother is still was, you know, learning in her wine, which I help her with every day.
we all do.
50% discount. So I remember when I drove into the Napa Valley for my very first internship, and I was there before the winemaker because I still needed to drive back to San Luis Obispo to go back to class the same day because I definitely booked my schedule tight. And I just remember, like, oh, you know, driving on 29 and you're like, what is this? This is a different part of California. I really like it. It is like, what's going on here? And so I tasted the wines, you know, I saw the winery and I'm like googly eyed and just like, whoa, this is really cool. Like very small. I've seen big tank farms. This was really attainable. And I was like, this is great. And so tasting those wines, this was at Provenance and Hewitt in 2011, and I was tasting, I worked under Tom Rinaldi and Chris Cooney and Trevor Durling, and that tasting that first day, I was like, like, oh baby, I love me some Cab. This is what I want to do. I want to make your mouth just like melt. And I'm like, oh yes.
I love it. I love it. So if we were to come into your home, what kind of wines would we find in there? What are you drinking on a daily basis or collecting?
So collecting and what I have, I've got a lot. So okay. I've got my stash is a hidden secret at an undisclosed location. A winery, of course. Uh-huh. We're just hidden somewhere, which is good. This is good. You got to keep your friends close and your wine further away so you don't drink it all. Because I'm trying to build my collection of my wines that I've made, wines that I've made all over the world and helped with. And so, but what you can find at my house is as much as possible in all dark corners of the house. You'll maybe 4, 5, 6 cases hidden around the house. And a lot of, you know, part of Foley family, I want to support our family and support my other winemakers. I got a lot of Lancaster, a lot of Foley Johnson I like, and always trying new stuff. I'm at Prevail, which is the red facility for Icrano, which we acquired, and I'm drinking their wines. I'm drinking everybody's wines. But sometimes, to be honest, at the end of the day, I'm not always reaching for the wine glass. So, maybe beer, maybe the sparkling, maybe some cider, you know.
So you're drinking a lot more local wines from, you know, Sonoma or from the California regions.
Yeah, I think it's my responsibility as a Californian. And you know, I go into other states and I'm like, why don't you have more California wine? What's going on? We need to be supporting California. We need to just be supporting our all wine industry in general. But I really think that it's good because people ask me like, well, where do I go tasting? Where should I go? What wine should I buy? These are the wines that are showing me. And it's like, okay, well, I better be tasting out there. And I want to taste and promote my colleagues. And that's really fun. It's really fun.
So is there a wine that you opened recently that was drinking really, really good?
Well, so I've been with Banshee. I've been since, it's just been my 1 year anniversary. So I've had to really switch my focus from like big old cabs to Sonoma County and light, delicate Pinots, but still backbone. So I've been tasting all around through Sonoma County, of course. Luckily, I've got a neighbor. She likes Rocchioli. Heck yes, me too. Bring them on over. I've got some Litterai. Someday maybe I'll have a little something with a crown on my label. The lemon. So
basically the next wine you drink is the best wine you'll have until the next wine you drink.
Well, yeah, I try. It's really wine. I mean, it's all about the setting. It's all about who you're with. I mean, I was just in Costa Rica. I took our unreleased rosé, and that's the best wine I've been tasting because we were snorkeling and having a little booze cruise, and I opened it with, we didn't have any glassware, but like those cafeteria kind of opaque cups.
Uh-huh.
And the bartender, he tried it and was like, they're used to a little more sweet. So he wasn't prepared for a proper rosé, which is fine. That's good. We shared it with some friends from New York, and they were like, I can see you drinking this all summer. And that's what I want to hear. That's
well, I'm drinking your 2021 rosé of Pinot Noir right now, and I can see it's perfect for summer. But let me ask you something. We love Pinot Noir. We're drinking, as I said, a rosé of Pinot Noir right now. You said that you started with Cabernet, and you're making all these things. Do you think there's a such thing as a perfect variety?
Perfect variety. Well, isn't it like perfectly imperfect, really, the way to be?
So perfect. Perfectly said. And a little more controversial question, potentially, but what's your thought on wine critics and scores?
Wine critics and scores. They help sell wine. Mm-hmm. And so I can see, I don't really know. I'm trying to make sure to.
They sell wine.
Yeah, they sell wine. It's fun. My goal to always be making over 90 points, but really, it's your own score. Everyone should be scoring their own palate. So I really think, truly, that a score is great. It helps sales. It helps really like get our wines circulating around out there. But you should be scoring the wines yourself. They should really be, you know, I really am like, okay, what's the price of this wine and how is it made? Because that's gonna tell me then whether, wow, that tastes like it's way more than that and way more complex. That's my score, is like, this is worth it. Better, like value and quality.
So speaking of scoring for yourself as a drinker, red, white, or rosé?
Red.
Still or sparkling?
Sparkling.
Domestic or champagne?
Or somewhere else?
Oh, well, it's a trick question because we have our bubbles, so I must say California. But, I mean, come on. I've been to Linz and France and all the caves. I mean,
So when it comes to wine, and like you said, you should trust your own palate and everyone drink what they like. But when it comes to food pairing, do you think that there are rules people should follow, or is it a come what may? How do you approach pairing wine and food?
Well, I think when you're pairing wine with food, you should definitely have tasted the wine before. So okay. A lot of people are like, well, we're just going to do the cab with the steak. And if you're comfortable with doing that, do that. But if you're a little more adventurous, and that's kind of bitchy, we're very hip, hipper than me. We're I don't know, hipper than hip, I don't know. But we do some fun pairings, like French fry pairing. And right now at our tasting room, we're doing a grilled cheese flight, which is really cool. And I mean, for me and for winemakers, my work is my mouth, my palate. And so me just tasting more and tasting all of this is great. And you say, hey, no, that didn't work as well as I thought. Or yeah, let's do that. Like we did, I had a cab for a wine dinner and they were serving salmon. And I was like, who did this? And I was like, okay, oh, but it's a bacon something or other. It was great. It was fabulous. And really, I think that's, you know, it can be our job too of like, can I pull this together with my palate or is it just not agreeing?
So not necessarily rules, but just experimenting, trying, having fun, and going outside sort of maybe what you would think. You just never know.
Yes.
So for somebody who's never had the privilege to taste Banshee wines, not yet, of course. They will after listening to you. They'll want to run out. But if they haven't had it, what do you think they're missing out on?
Good wines. I mean, really good wines, in my opinion. So, I mean, we do, for the price point, for... what they, you know, it's a true Sonoma County Pinot Noir. It's a fabulous representation of mostly Russian River and Los Carneros Sonoma region. These AVAs, it's I think they are great representation and true to variety of where you're getting fruit. A lot of my job is also like, the shining star is not me. It's the wine and it's the fruit. And so I want that fruit to show. I want you to taste fruit, mm-hmm. and I want your mouth to be salivating, and I want you to take another sip of that glass. I want you to go back.
So if aliens were to land on your property right now, and you were to welcome them with one of your wines, which of your wines would you want to offer first?
First, we're going to start off with the sparkling. And I have these really cool glasses that are like kind of like a unicorn tint. Like they are kind of cute. They're not pokey, it looks nice, and they're stemless, and so I would serve them in these kind of psychedelic glasses, some of our brut sparkling, heck yes!
So, you've been making wine for a little while now, you've got a good decade under your belt, and you said you've worked other places around the world? So I'm curious, we know that every vintage tells a different story, but how much do you think there's a big variation year to year, or do you find that there's more commonality?
Variation, for sure. There's always variation. We have to think about this as an agriculture product. So really, every year, whether you're doing larger farming or small farming, you know, the larger scale farming, we want to make sure we're getting our tons accurate. With the smaller farming, sometimes we need to get those tons up or need to get them down. But really, I lost my train of thought.
I can ask that again.
What was it? Go for it.
Okay. So you've been working, your career is about 10 years long now. You've worked a number of harvests, and you've worked harvests in California as well as what other places have you worked?
Okay, so I've worked in five different countries making wine. Uh-huh. I started in Australia. Oh no, Italy, then Australia, then, let me start that over.
Hold on. So you've been making wine now for about a decade, but aside from California, you've made wine elsewhere. Where else have you made wine?
Yeah, so I did the harvest hopping after my first harvest and was able to make wine in Australia, Italy, did a little bit of cherry wine in Denmark. Then I went to South Africa, and I also worked in Argentina.
Wow, lots of different places, but you're really based in California where we're blessed with sunshine and pretty consistent weather. And so when it comes to a vintage, we know there's variation from vintage to vintage, but do you find that there's more variation from year to year or more commonality?
I would say there is, our job is trying to kind of make it a commonality, so we're really giving our consumers a consistent product. But then when you're getting with our really small, single vineyard lots, that's where you're definitely going to have flexuality, and every year is going to be super different, but still going to have those same backbone because it's the same vineyard. So we really want to make a consistent product. I want to make the wines that I know kind of how that's going to taste, and of course we're going to have year-to-year variation. Mother Nature is in charge. We're an agriculture product. We just went through a very cold spring, and I'm not going to say the two F words because we've got our least favorite F word is right now in the spring, not going to say it, and then in the fall, it's a hot F word, and I don't like that one either, and so we just don't say those words.
Everyone's going,
a cold one and
the
a hot
F word. So do you think that there are any signs or predictors that will help you sense what kind of vintage is ahead of you?
Oh yes, every day we're always thinking about next harvest. So we're already okay. We had rain in early rain, a lot, but really quick. No rain after that. So we're already okay thinking about yields, thinking about how much water are we gonna have every day. you're basically thinking, okay, how is this affecting my grapes? Every single day. That's where winemakers are thinking every day about, okay, have we pruned? Okay, is it bud break? Okay, what's going on? I mean, are the fans on? We're always thinking every day of how it's going to be impacting, because we need to alter anything that we need to do. We would need to alter it ahead of time. If we're going to have lower yields and not enough water, we need to make sure that we do have enough water to support the heat spikes that we get sometimes.
But when you have a lot of rain and you're looking at something, are you necessarily saying this is what that means for later, or we deal with it now and see what comes next? And I mean, how much do you look ahead saying that's going to affect us in this way or that way?
Well, we can only look so far ahead because it's Mother Nature again. Here she is. She's in control. So yeah, we were excited. We're like, oh my goodness, come on, bring on this rain. It's going to be great. And then kind of stopped. And so we're putting on a different head. We're going to make sure that, okay, we've got our kind of drought head. We know what to do when we're going in that corner, and we're still going to be doing our rain dance every day in our office.
So Mother Nature, you cannot control, and she will do whatever she wants. But one thing you can control is sort of, good luck rituals. As a winery or as a winemaker, have you established any good luck rituals for yourself or for your team at the start of harvest?
Good luck ritual. Well, I don't have a harvest beard, so no harvest beard for me. My dad used to do a harvest beard, and then when we finished harvest, they called it, shot the rabbit, and that's some kind of sneaky term, and then he would have a bubble bath in the house with a cigar. Nope, we had to go way somewhere else. And with like ZZ Top, bum, 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 and he'd shave his beard. So like, I remember those traditions. And they were great. I was like, he's smoking a cigar in the house. Oh my gosh.
It's over.
A little less dramatic. And, you know, still being relatively a young winemaker, I'm always making new traditions. For me, we're always going to do some kind of toast on the first day, or blessing of the grapes, whether it's usually not really religious, more just signifying like, hey, everybody, take notice. Because we're about to do something very special. And usually I bake cookies and try to get people excited. And everyone likes sweets. And so we usually have like some sparkling and some sweets. There could be some savoring involved. I definitely like that. And you know, I like to know when our other sister winery is like, hey, are you doing your blessing of the grapes? Let me come over and have a glass of wine with you guys and cheers your harvest. It's really, that's fun. I mean, it's the first grapes.
So once you have your grapes in and you've blessed them in your non-religious way, I'm curious, I'm sure you visit the vineyards throughout the season and walk the vines. Do you at any point talk to the grapes? Do you talk to them when they're on the vines? Do you speak to your wine what's in barrel? Do you cox it along? Do you encourage it, or do you just ignore it?
Well, I was going to say, how did you know? My boyfriend says it's like living with a cartoon character. I've lived alone a lot, so sometimes I just talk to myself. I don't have a lot of pets, so I just do talk to myself. No, I've talked to the grapes for sure. I'm always talking. And then I like, sometimes I slap the tank a little bit. Cabs, they like it a little rougher. So I'm like, hey, baby, how you doing? They like a little spicy love. So I definitely am always, yes, I'm always talking to the wine. Sometimes they'll be like, you are being a, like, I get a little upset and I'm like, okay, tone it back, Alicia. This, you're gonna be a shining star. So I'm always giving it pep talks. I'm totally talking to wine, slapping barrels. I'm like, how you doing?
You seem like a natural at this, but I'm curious, when you were a little girl, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Leanne Rimes. Or a school teacher.
And yet here you are, teaching those grapes. So when you're not working, how do you like to spend your free time?
I try to stay really active. We're constantly hiking. As I said, we just got back from Costa Rica, and I spent two nights hiking in the jungle there. We're hiking all around Sonoma County. This is kind of a definite perk of why I left the Central Valley, is like, I like these hills right around me, and I like to be able to hike a lot. I do a lot of crafting, like handmade cards for my friends. Aww. I just had two friends who are having babies, so they get a baby card, and if it's your birthday, and I make sure that I it's all my friends' birthdays are during fall, so it's really I've kind of drifted away from the birthday cards because it's always during harvest, but yeah, hand-making cards, I love that.
I like that. And so you're into hiking, and you mentioned your boyfriend, so I'm curious, for a romantic evening with your boyfriend, what sort of wines would you open to set the mood?
Well, we're working on his palate. So for me, and it's a rule for me, is I'm not opening really nice wine. I'm not going to bring it to you. You have to have it with me.
Uh-huh.
So usually I have to kind of tell him, hey, you have to use a regular glass, not a little, like the little, he likes a little tumbler kind of thing. I'm like, no, we're not in Italy and this is not the house wine. This is some wine I want you to taste. And then you can drink it after that. But usually we'll start maybe a variation. So I like, you know, we'll start with something fruitier. I'll be like, hey, I just made this. Can you taste it? And he'll be like, yeah, it's okay. And I'm like, okay. But so we're working on his wine connoisseuring. But usually it'll be my mother and I. She'll be like, okay, Alicia's here. We got to open up something nice.
Romantic evenings with your mom.
Heck yes. We'll open some of the old Hewitts or Provenances that we got when my first harvest. So that's always super fun.
When you look back at your career or your life, is there a piece of advice that someone gave you that you try to live by or work by? And what was it?
I have a winemaker colleague who kind of told me of like, make your wines. Like we'll get influenced by other people of like, make it this like this, make it like this, or do, and you know, trust your palate and make your wines. You know what you're doing. And being, you know, it was an accomplishment to become a winemaker at 30, and I was like, hell yeah, I'm rocking this. This is what I do. And continue to just have that confidence in yourself, because really our job is everyday changing. And we're really just problem solvers. So how well can we problem solve and do that in a team and really make the wine shine?
Hmm. And if you could give our listeners a piece of advice, what kind of advice would you want to give a bunch of wine enthusiasts?
Do a harvest. I would say work a harvest. If you want, and if you're young or old, work a harvest. It's very labor intensive, and not just I want to do 2 weeks. No, I'm talking about doing the whole harvest. The best experience that I have was I saved all my money and I did those harvests back to back. Most people are able to do one harvest and then they just don't have enough money. I made money through 4-H. I was catered. And so I was really able to just kind of, in some areas at South Africa, break even, maybe not even. I was getting paid $200 a month.
But the experience is
exactly
invaluable.
Exactly. So travel, save your money so that you can go and work and travel, work and travel. I really have a strong work ethic, and so that allowed, you know, me being able to work and travel allowed me to travel and make it be okay in my like parents' mind.
Well, speaking of work ethic, when you look back at your career, and you have a long career ahead of you, you're still very young, but I'm curious, what would you say is one of your proudest achievements to date?
I think my proudest achievement to date is that I became a head winemaker at 30, and that I've done this pulling my bootstraps straight up. I've networked, I've got great mentors that I've surrounded myself with. I've expanded my community through joining Women for Wine Sense. I think that my biggest success is myself. You know, my family has Amets, and I'm like, rip out those grapes because you're gonna make more money. And I moved away from them. So me, just my independence, what I've really done with my career and how I've excelled, it's something that is a huge achievement. And I have to just kudos myself a little bit.
Cheers to you.
Thank you.
I love that. So complete this sentence for me. A table without wine is like...
Well, I hope it has other alcoholic beverages, at least. It sounds a little boring.
And now another imaginary question for you. We're just going to get you're very creative. I think you can do this. But if you can imagine a scenario, we're sitting at a dinner table and you're sharing your wines, as you like to do with people. Who from any walk of life would you want to share a bottle of Banshee wines with?
Okay, so I've thought about this question because and it made me cry. it would be both both sets of grandparents. My mother's set were very old, and so I think it would be so interesting to, like, I don't think they would know what was going on. I never had met them, and I thought that would be really cool. And my father's set, you know, they passed away when I was just 17 and just a punk, really. So it would be, I think they would be so proud of this wonderful sassy lady that I've become and making some really kick-ass wines.
I love it. So if you had to go to a deserted island, what three wines would you want to take with you? Any three wines.
Deserted island. Well, okay, well, I wouldn't bring my favorites because it would be way too hot.
No, it's your island. It can be any weather condition you want.
Okay.
It's imaginary.
Oh, okay. Imaginary island. Well, then we're going to do some large formats because we're going to capitalize on this. Let's see. Some of my favorite wines. Probably something that we'll probably throw a Lancaster in there. Something from Hewitt. And then probably an old Duckhorn.
All Cabernets.
Well, that's my heart and soul, baby.
Ah, all Cabernets. Okay.
Well, and it will do the job. If I'm in it, if I'm on an island, any temperature, large format, a little higher alcohol. I think that does. I'm not happy.
Wow. Okay. Just going to an island with Cabernet. So we always play a little game because we're almost at the end here. We always play a little game where we like to pair wine and music. It is called Wine Soundtrack After All. Based on some of the wines we talked about, some of the wines that we have in front of us, some of your wines, I want you to pair them with music. It can be a genre. It could just be a style of music. It could be a specific artist or a specific song. It's really up to you, wherever. Don't stress out about it. But we've been sipping on your 2021 Banshee Rosé of Pinot Noir, and I'm wondering, what does that make you think of?
So I listen to a lot of crazy music, all over the place. It really just sometimes it's nice just background. But I think for the road, and I'm definitely younger. I'm a millennial, so I think we're gonna do some like tropical house music with this rosé, and then I was thinking like with the
well, yeah. Let's go to next.
Well, like the Pinot Noir.
Your Pinot Noir. This is the Banshee Sonoma County 2019 Pinot Noir.
I explain this Pinot too is that you're driving from Carneros through Sonoma County, through the Redwoods, up and then out to the coast and like Bodega or Jenner. And so really some good driving music so that you have like, maybe it could be some fun psychedelic music. Maybe it could be some like really relaxed, like focus flow kind of playlist music. But really like driving, I think it just like takes you, taking the time with the music, yeah. Not just a one song kind of thing.
Got it. And then your Banshee Durell Vineyard, so vineyard specific Pinot Noir.
Okay, so our marketing did a great job with the notes. They did some kind of geeky, some Star Wars, so that's great. Because also, I mean, I'm come from the Central Valley. Hello, that is where George Lucas is from. My uncle went to high school with him, so I've got a half a tiny carrot of claim to fame. So we had to do like the Star Wars thing. Plus, I mean, who doesn't like Star Wars?
And then your beloved Cabernet, let's go with Hewitt Cabernet.
Oh, well, okay, so some of the big Hewitts, we're going to do like a big sexy something, like maybe some jazzy, but like attitude. Not too smooth, but just smooth enough.
Ah, So now I need to start playing music and drinking your wine because I'm getting thirsty. But as we finish here, I'm wondering, I have one last question for you. What wine region in the world is at the top of your list that you want to explore next?
So I've been to quite a few, and I was thinking about this question, and I think so. When I worked in Italy, I did mostly central and southern, and so I'd like to hit. I've got a friend who works in Austria. They own a winery, and we were interns together. I want to go to his winery. They make great wines. So Austria, Northern Italy, Europe, maybe some German. I mean, yeah, I had a lot of German wines living in Denmark because that's just right there. So
when you're not doing cherry wine.
Yeah, which was great. It was so fun. Yeah, I'd like to do some of those cooler climates because I've been a lot of places. So it'll be interesting too. Like, we gotta go back and see how the wines have evolved and what's changed. So I'll have to do like a loop. I need to go back to Italy. I need to say hello to everybody that, you know, treated me so well and helped me with my career.
Well, and for people who might want to come to Sonoma as their next destination, how can they visit Banshee? Where can they find you guys? Are you, you're distributed in some markets with some wines. What markets are you in? And then how do they visit you and taste in person?
So you can find our wines in some grocery stores and outlets. You'll find the Sonoma County Pinot, the Chard, the Cabernet, our Mordecai, and some of our Rosé. Really, the Pinot, the reds are the drivers there. And so,
and these are in all markets?
Not all markets. You know, I am only the winemaker, so I'm like, we're expanding, and we got some in Florida. We're all over. My mom keeps trying to find them in Modesto and like looking for the display, not at her local Safeway,
okay,
but at many and Vaughn's, Albertson's, Pavilions. We've got some really fun stuff on the East Coast and in the Midwest. And I just haven't been out there yet because of COVID and all this. So I haven't really reached into the markets, but we're there and we are excited to be. But also where I live in Healdsburg and where our tasting room is just right around the corner from the downtown square, the plaza, which is just lovely in Healdsburg. You can taste during our winter hours. We're closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, but during the summer we're open, I think, every day. Mm-hmm. And you can make an appointment online at BanscheeWines.com. You can buy our wines online and become part of the Foley Food and Wine Society, which has a tons of perks, and it's also a tongue twister for me. And come to the tasting room and come have a glass of wine with me.
Alicia, thank you so much for joining us today on Wine Soundtrack. I hope you had a good time. It's been wonderful to hear your story. And I think next time I'm up in Sonoma, I'll be on the Healdsburg Square. So I'll come step over and say hello.
Yeah, I really hope you do. If I'm available, I'll ride my bike right on down and we'll enjoy a glass of wine together.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to a new episode of Wine Soundtrack USA. For details and updates, visit our website, winesoundtrack.com.